Welcome to Real World Theology, episode 60. On this episode, we are talking about Avengers Age of Ultron. Because this movie is going to be so huge, or it already is so huge, I probably need very little introduction, so I'll keep this brief. The latest installment from the Marvel Universe, Joss Whedon's last stand, if you will, is incredible. It's big. It's everything you could want in an Avengers movie. And to help me talk about that is James Harleman and Josh Crabb. There's been a couple pieces of controversy. We've already talked about this on the site a couple times. We were very excited to talk about this. And there's no way that we hit everything, which is always a great thing. But we do talk about fear, isolation, loss. Josh and I actually get into a conversation about the rise of interest in AI films. At a post 9/11 world, we see lots of themes and ideas that are prevalent in other films, and we think Josh does a great job. So, as always, we're going a little bit deeper. So here it is, episode 60, Age of Ultron and the Isolation of Fear. Movie theaters are modern-day pulpits. Real-world theology exists to shed a light on the narratives that are shaping our culture, and to encourage viewers to recognize that entertainment is not mindless.
And, you know, I mean, we saw the Avengers twice already, so, you know, I mean, that's...
Who hasn't, really? I mean, anyone who, like... Anyone who's... Josh, you haven't seen it twice.
I mean, you know... I drugged myself out to see it a second time because I knew I'd have to do the podcast, you know. So I just, you know.
Oh, gosh. I mean, you were such a servant for Christ.
Amazing.
just carrying your cross, man, for ministry.
That's heavy burden.
We do need to, speaking of you on the bus, we need to figure out when your bus is going to stop sometime in the next second half of the year. What else you want to talk? What else you want to review?
Oh yeah,
because I like this. I like this consistent, like bothering you to be on about every 6 months. So, I gotta figure out what's coming out. You know, in somewhere in the 4 to 7 month time frame that you want to talk about. Because I was thinking with your very limited response of I call dibs on Age of Ultron. I was thinking, oh man, I really thought he would have you'd have picked up on some Guillermo del Toro. Was it Crimson something?
Oh, Crimson Peak! Can't wait.
I thought that would have been it.
You know, yeah, that's one of the, I just didn't circle back and pick other picks. I mean,
I'm at the top of the game.
Yeah,
no, man. I'm so excited about this year in general in movies. Like after last year. Well, you know, like the total box office gross last year was down like 5 or 6%, I think. And I think this year it's going to be crazy with Avengers and, I mean, Furious 7 did a bajillion dollars and Star Wars. I can't imagine how this year's not going to just cream box office.
You mentioned last year, though. You mentioned last year and had to thus remind me of Transformers Age of My Childhood's Extinction.
Mm-hmm. Well, you were so excited about it, dude.
There were Dinobots, man. Come on. Dinobots.
I mean, I wanted to be excited, wondrous. Too, but I tried. I tried. I mean, I went to see it, and I was like, I'm going to enjoy this more than most people, and I just wanted it to be over.
So. The abomination that causes Cybertronian desolation.
It's all right. We'll get another 3 or 4 more.
Hey, you know, but now they're talking to their direct. Like, if we jettison the bay... Then we could be back in business.
Do you? I mean, I know I never really minded. I guess I did mind lots of his stuff.
Actually, I'm not a Bay hater. In fact, I'm the guy that likes Transformers 1 and 3. So
yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not the big hater, but I think it would go better if they loaned it out to other. You know, it's like Star Wars, but it's like, all right, let J.J. Abrams have a crack. Lucas, you're past your, you know.
Mm-hmm. Have been past prime.
You need to pass the jar to someone else.
Oh my gosh. Laura found something online called the, I'm going to assume it's the machete order for watching the Star Wars movies.
Yeah.
And it's, you don't watch episode one at all.
Right.
You watch A New Hope, Empire, and then you watch whatever two and three are called, and then Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do that, one, it takes out almost all the mentions of midichlorians. It takes out almost all the mention, or Jar Jar's hardly in it at all. It gets rid of a whole bunch of unnecessary characters and Trade Federation stuff, and doesn't confuse you with, even as cool as Darth Maul is, like him being there, and so you always assume that other dude is the apprentice. And what it does is, once you learn that Vader is Luke's father,
mm-hmm.
it basically takes you and shows you his character arc and how he wrestled with going to the dark side and what that looked like, and like the clothes he wore and how he acted and the things he said. And then you go right into Jedi and you see Luke, you know, showing up in black, doing things that are very similar to what Anakin does in 2 and 3. And you actually wonder, like, what side he's going to choose by the end of Jedi. So it's actually, you know, it's actually like this big thing. Like, what's he going to do? What's he going to do? As opposed to, like, just watching one, two, and, or watching Empire than Jedi, where you don't have anything to compare that character to. And now I just want kids that are, like, however old you need to be to watch Star Wars, so I can watch that happen.
So. Oh, nice. Well, Josh, should we kick this thing up, Joshua? Is that,
no? Yeah, Josh.
Yeah.
Where you at, man?
I'm right here.
Gosh, you say that.
I'm sorry. Okay, so... I'm having a really hard time because I'm so used to listening to these podcasts when James is on, not being on it. So.
Well, you put in a lot of good work recently.
That's what I just heard.
Yeah. Okay, so I've seen Avengers twice. James, you've seen it twice. Josh?
I saw it at Disney, mm-hmm. so I don't know. does that count as maybe 1.5?
Is that like potency?
Or is that a scene at, if you see it at the source, isn't that, that's like double right there, right?
I think so. I think it is. Mm-hmm. I honestly mm-hmm. think it is. It was actually a pretty wonderful experience. So I'd never had been at like a dine-in theater before either. And I was actually kind of dreading it because I thought it was going to be, you know, all you'd hear is clinking plates and like, you know, people slurping stuff the whole movie. But it was pretty dang loud in there. So it was hard to hear much of anything except the movie, which was pretty great.
Well, we started going to a movie and diner kind of thing recently because it does one very important thing for me, especially when I watch movies like this the first time, which is it requires everyone to be 21 and older.
Yeah.
And now there is something to say about watching it with a multiple generations represented, because there's just this different atmosphere. But usually I want to be able to hear all the jokes and all that stuff the first time. The problem with it this time is that we actually got food, which we typically do not do, and our waiter kept coming back, like, in the middle of the movie to try to get me to, like, sign stuff or take our trays away. And I'm like, you're standing right in the way. I actually missed a good part of the Iron Man Victoria Hulk fight.
Because
he's, like, standing right in front of me.
Veronica. Veronica.
Yeah, Veronica, sorry.
Because you got that, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, you got actually, the Archie thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good.
But you're welcome to explain. I was gonna say I was gonna send out a top Easter egg thing but I figured between the two of you guys, I wouldn't really need to do that.
Well, it's just great, you know. Even in the whole comics, there was a moment where Betty got a job working at a call center, and the girl right next to her in the cubicle was Veronica, and they had that moment of Betty Veronica. Ha ha ha, kind of. So they've even played with that in the comics. So I just thought it was beautiful that the bad girl for the Hulk is Veronica. You know, a nice nod to people who probably don't even remember. Most moviegoers probably don't even remember his girlfriend's name. But you know,
Whatever. No, that was one of the funniest things, because it was like, if you don't remember, the Hulk's estranged girlfriend is Betty from, like, you know, 6 years ago, or some, yeah, you know, if you even remember that far back in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So did anyone not like this movie a lot?
You know, I had to see it a second time. I had mixed feelings. I had really weird mixed feelings coming out of it the first time, because it felt, I had three complaints. One was that, and still remains, that the opening sequence has some really poor CGI. Cap bouncing around on the bike doesn't look like he's interacting with his physical environment at all.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, after that opening sequence, the effects were splendid. But I don't know what it just did. They send it to like this second stringer team with, you know, they run out of time. Like, what, I'm not sure what happened. It just didn't. That really kind of gave me a weird taste right out of the gate. And then it also felt extraordinarily rushed. Understanding Joss had a 3.5 hour cut and had some conflicts with Marvel, and that there will most likely be an extended cut, I can forgive that one very easily.
Or we're hoping, at least.
And the next one was it didn't feel, and I realized this isn't my complaint about the movie, it's my complaint about the franchise, and more importantly, the TV division, is if you've been watching the television pieces, it really doesn't align. It felt like the movie started, I was like, this doesn't make any sense. They can't have been assembling regularly and have developed all of these rhythms. But then I realized that's because of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and that's not the movie itself. So,
mm-hmm.
So but then the only real issue then was that opening sequence, which gave me a weird kind of bad taste that it took a few minutes to go away. But by the time we get to the Hulk fight, yeah, that was gone. So the rushed thing, it's sad that, you know, I almost wish that they had realized they had two movies going. And, I mean, I don't know. I think it's understanding the medium that they're adapting from and the medium they're going into. I almost would have, like, why didn't they keep the 3.5 hour cut, make it 1 hour and 45 minute, two movies, and release them 6 months apart? I mean, just an idea, just off the top of my head, make it summer and Christmas. I don't know. Well, I saw it twice anyway, so that my mind could keep up with it. So I could have taken a better paced edition, seeing it, you know, twice this year differently. I don't know.
No, I get you. Because what you're saying actually reminds me of some of the, I would say, criticism that some of the critics have given it. And also one of what it seems like, even though he's playing it very, very politically correct. Well, not very politically, but fairly politically correct. Joss Whedon talking about, you know, having to fight with the studio for some of the things that he wanted, and really not wanting this to be a transition film, you know, like a film that kind of starts in the middle of a story and then doesn't feel like a completed thing by the end. And I can see his frustration, because I feel like what you're talking about kind of describes that too. It picks up in the middle of something, and even though there's some context given to kind of catch people up who obviously, you know, who don't watch S.H.I.E.L.D. or may have just come in from the Winter Soldier, they still would have had to see, like, the Winter Soldier to really understand kind of what was going on. And then on top of that, it ends, but it's obviously clearly setting up other things. So,
and I don't know if I have a problem with that so much. Just that it's getting all your pieces to align, which is something comics have fought to do for years. So if Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. had this big reveal where it's like, oh, monumental, we're going to send out this communication and we're going to get the Avengers to assemble. But that's the movie, if you listen carefully, says they've been assembling ever since, basically since the end of Winter Soldier. Like, Winter Soldier was a go. So, like, that seems like a major continuity error between the two things. And because I was watching the show, I was like, well, surely somebody in this world spy organization would have mentioned that the Avengers were very publicly, with the big tower, assembling regularly.
And surely someone would have noticed.
For all the needless name dropping they did in season one, you'd think they could have at least been thrown out some bones that would have teased this out properly. So I don't know what that breakdown is. I love Joss, and I usually fight for creator stuff, but I think that's another issue with the medium. Cause you know, the idea that you're always coming out, you're coming in the middle of something and you're also teasing up what's next. That's called a monthly comic book, man.
Mm-hmm.
Like the medium you're adapting, like that is the reality of every issue. I'm torn. I think I feel bad for Joss on a few of the things and probably agree with him, but I also kind of, this is the game we're playing, guys. You know, I mean, like comic books have been doing this for decades, and that's part of the soap opera-ish nature. I mean, like that, and it's even understanding, like, it's the medium, it's the understanding we have of what the medium of film should be clashing with what I think is, this whole Marvel phase process is fundamentally shift. Like it goes against what a lot of purists in film, I mean, it's even bigger than the Potter thing, or it's bigger than a Star Wars trilogy. I mean, you're taking all these different trilogies, splicing them together into group films. And it's just it's rarely been done. Mm-hmm. Everybody remembers the old Universal Monsters, but that's like the 1930s or whatever. I mean, like that, how long has that been? So anyways, but what does Joshua really think? That's what I want to know. You saw it, came out, you walked out of theater and you said,
It was funny because I turned to my wife. I think I posted this on social media, like when I walked out, because my wife's totally not into these movies at all, but she was incredibly gracious to go to the movie with me while we were in Orlando. And we walked out and she was like, that could never happen. And I
missed the point.
I was like, yes, but it could. And she's like, no. But I was like, no, it could. But I mean, I walked out of there, and I think it took me till the next morning to really like just be able to stop smiling after I was done watching it. because I mean, I saw it on a Sunday night, and I wrote a review for Monday morning, but I really didn't even get to it till I like jumped out of bed in the morning because I just couldn't put all of my thoughts together because I was too busy being like, this was a great just culmination and continuation of what they've already been doing. Like I don't think it's their best film, but does that really matter when you get all of those guys together? It's just totally. I really, really, really enjoy how it seems like Iron Man and Captain America's arcs are coming together, and that, you know, immediately makes you think, you know, obviously of Civil War. And I just it was a real pleasure to watch the movie. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, I mean, I think we touched on this a little bit, Mikey, when we talked about Jupiter Ascending, that, you know, movies can have a level of fun to them that just makes mm-hmm. them more enjoyable than maybe some of their parts do or what puts them together. But I enjoyed the parts of this. And when it comes together, it just makes for an incredibly joyous, happy experience. And there's nothing quite like having a Joss Whedon screenplay come out in a movie. And it's just, it's quick, it's funny, you know, like people who have no investment in Avengers whatsoever can laugh and enjoy the funny moments. You know, like my wife thought it was funny, even though she has no investment in these characters and she has no idea who all these people are, but it was just great. And I loved it. And it's so great. And I'm so sad to see Whedon not doing Infinity War. Yeah. And I don't know what his role is going to be, if he's going to, you know, kind of be consulting, because I feel like James Gunn's Guardians of the Galaxy had some Joss Whedon, you know, massaging in it. But, you know, it was great. I mean, putting two great things together, the Avengers and Joss Whedon, just always makes for pleasurable greatness.
Well, I want to be careful not to throw the baby out with the bathwater here, because lots of people would probably put Winter Soldier as like the best Marvel film. And, you know, that's who we're getting to do the Infinity Wars. So
sure.
The Russo brothers, right?
Yeah.
So if they are going to be doing Civil War and they do another great job, then I will feel less worried. But I do understand kind of what you're saying.
Yeah, no, and I'm not trying to say at all that, you know, the Russo brothers are going to fumble the football. Sports analogy! Sports ball!
What? I don't even know what you're talking about here. Like, everything went swirly.
James Harleman, the only person from Seattle who does not understand sports.
You know, I learned in the last couple of years just so I could be all things to all people.
Right. Yeah, no kidding. You really haven't had much of a choice, have you?
No.
But, you know, no, the Russo brothers aren't going to fumble. I mean, they proved to be incredibly adept. And I don't think that, you know, Age of Ultron, because I really felt like Winter Soldier, Guardians of the Galaxy, two great, incredible Marvel movies from last year. Just like, you know, going back and viewing some of the older ones, it's like, man, they've really just, the quality has stepped up. And I don't think Age of Ultron, even though I would probably say that those two movies from 2014 are, I enjoy a little bit more than this movie, I can't say that it's any significant step back.
Well, the Avengers was, and I would put the Avengers as sort of a trio of the best, the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, at some point you have to, like, yeah, was Age of Ultron as good? No. Do I remember my second date? Not as much as I remember the first date. You know, it's like, come on, sure, man. Like, at sure, some man. Point, you just have to let it go. It's like, this is, you know, we're dating the Marvel franchise. Like, not every single kiss can't be better than the kiss before. You know, it just, like, this can be, the expectations just get crazy. So, yeah, and I would totally agree. I came out of the gate saying my three things that frustrated me. But I would totally agree. I had a spectacular time. We're talking about it. We're quoting it. Tony Stark looking at the Hulk and saying, "I'm sorry," was just—I mean, it had, oh, yeah, had us rolling. Yeah. And or actually, between that and the go to sleep was just. Those were things I've wanted to see on the big screen since I was reading comics in the '70s, right? So I mean, like that I had no real significant issues, and I'd probably still be in the. It's probably in the top five. Or, you know, five or six. If I tried to start rating them, it's still, yeah, you're right. It's climbed above several of the inaugural entries. I mean, for sure. Well, they're maintaining a level and a bar. Nobody lowered the bar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I love the analogy because now I don't have to think really hard about what to name the show because now it can just be Age of Ultron and making out with Marvel.
Sweet.
Well, okay, so we all enjoyed this movie on a fun level, and I would say that most of the people who are going to see this movie are like, sweet, another Avengers movie, you're bringing a whole bunch of fun characters together, I'm gonna shut down, watch the explosions, watch the Hulk things and Iron Man be snarky, and, you know, crazy things. Captain America is going to throw his shield, and it's just going to be a lot of fun. And the main thing I'm going to get out of this is that, oh, it's great that we can just enjoy something that takes us back to our childhood, or even, you know, rationalize it that way. But I have used this so many times that the quote that Joss Whedon had when someone asked him after Avengers was such a huge success of, like, Once you make a movie that's, you know, makes over $1 billion and it's a worldwide success, like what do you do in the sequel? And he says the trick is not to go bigger, but to go deeper. And I was like, how in the world is he actually going to go deeper when you're adding like three or four characters? You've already got a packed story. You have to take time to introduce new people, get us to care about everything, and then, like I said, do that going deeper piece. And especially after having seen it the second time and kind of gotten over the fast pace of the movie and having to fit everything into 2 hours and 21 minutes, I really stopped to think. Every single character in this movie had a chance to not just be who they represent or the thing that you saw from another movie, but we saw a side of them that we haven't seen really in any of the other movies. And I think he does successfully go deeper, and outside of each character going deeper, I feel like this movie explores fear and, you know, humanity, what a post 9/11 society fears the most and what we find security in. And it's, and that's what I love about Joss Whedon having his hand on it, because it's not just a funny quip. Like, everything in this movie is pointing towards something, whether it's something we're learning about ourselves, something we're learning about our character, or something that's setting up roots for future movies. So with that said, one, would you disagree? And I hope not, because it's going to be a boring conversation if you do. But kind of, where did you see it, the movie laying down roots, or what kind of stuck out to you, Josh?
Hey. Yeah, you know, I think that the first thing that you said, touching on the whole idea, getting beyond the, you know, the comic book speculation about Civil War, like the first thing that I was going for was something that's been arcing with Iron Man and arcing with Captain America for a while in these movies, is like this dichotomy of fear and duty and justice and all these things, and sort of it coming to a head in this movie with Ultron, where Ultron is almost like the fallen Tony Stark, or like almost a realization of Tony Stark's fears and like the twisting of those fears. You know, like, fear is not necessarily a bad thing. You know, we say fear of God. Fearing God is a good thing. And, you know, having the right kind of fear can be a good thing. But, you know, taking Tony Stark's fear of, you know, what you said, like a post 9/11 society, taking this idea that we need to basically create something that stops a war before it starts. In like his, it's called the Iron Brigade, right? All those different Iron Men that he created. Okay. I'm just making sure I get this right. You know, creating this Iron Brigade that is a keepers of the peace, so to speak. And, I don't know, they don't really go into that too much in this movie. But, you know, getting back to that, this whole idea that this fear comes out in Tony Stark trying to build this thing and trying to get to this point where he can bring the Ultron project to its culmination and have this smart AI that's able to patrol the world and keep the peace. And, you know, I think the line that he says is peace in our time.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's it. And, you know, this whole idea of creating peace in our time and that the Avengers won't have to be the Avengers anymore. And then, you know, those sort of two things being taken by Ultron and twisted into, well, that means I got to get rid of the Avengers. Oh, yeah. And I have to get rid of humanity at the same time. And, you know, and it's sort of like this twisting and this marring of, you know, a legitimate fear or a legitimate desire that Tony Stark has. And, you know, the characters even say it, that, you know, it's kind of Ultron is like this manifestation of Tony Stark's like ambitions, but in a twisted or marred sense. And then contrasting that with Captain America, you know, I just love Captain America. I mean, I've always liked Captain America, but these past couple movies, like I didn't see the first Avenger until almost shortly before Winter Soldier, because everyone was kind of like lambasting the first Avenger, and I watched it. I was like, this is a really good movie. And then I watched the Winter Soldier, and like, this is an even better movie. And, you know, getting to this point where Captain America seems to be what Superman should be at this point. And, you know, Captain America is this embodiment of democratic ideals and, you know, freedom and justice and all these things, and how he can see those two things coming to a head in this movie. And you even see it, like, they start fighting each other. And, you know, I just loved that whole arc. And I'm, you know, I can kind of like toss this up for someone to grab onto that for right now. But I really thought that was really going deeper. And I know it might be setting up something else, but I think that it was really great to see that and to latch on to sort of like all these different ideas and like bigger societal issues that we struggle with as Americans and as global citizens too.
Yeah. I think, it felt to me, I almost my hackles almost came up until I understood. I mean, really, we were talking about the Scarlet Witch, who even later in a scene, I've seen some reviewers talk about how it's Tony's fault or the Avengers create the problem that then they have to fix. And that's one of my complaints about a lot of comic books. At some point, it just seems like the only reason they're fighting is because the villain wants revenge on them. And
sure.
Like, who, if anything, are they really helping? It's truly, I mean, Scarlet Witch even takes, I mean, in the final, one of the final scenes there with her and Hawkeye, she says, like, this is all happening because of me. This is all because of me. She actually causes, it's not a storyline regression, it's a Tony Stark regression, because he was dealing with this in Iron Man 3. Mm-hmm, it was Pepper sure. focused instead of global focused, but it's, you know, I need 42 suits. You know, I'm on suit 42 because I can't protect everybody. I can't protect the ones I love. I can't. He was already there. So I was just like, wait a minute, haven't we seen this before? But yes, that's she brought back, like many of us facing temptations. They're usually not new things. They just, we fall back into that. We're moving forward, and then what does the devil do? The devil, you know, our spiritual oppression comes and basically revivifies the
sure.
parts of the old man. And yeah. so you literally have Tony fall back into something that he was struggling with on something that is then a grander scale. And so there's a cool conversation in there sometime where he actually refuses to say the devil or the Scarlet Witch made me do it. He takes responsibility for it. When he's talking with Cap over the, when they're chopping wood, I mean, he owns it, but at the same time, it actually brought up, I mean, as a pastor, brought up one of those things in my head. I said, well, how much do we need to acknowledge? It's like, well, okay, the enemy was, you're under extreme torment. Like, let's take ownership for your mistakes, but let's also recognize there was additional torment going on here. And there was things were poking into your soul, you know, and how do we understand some of that? And so, in this case, you know, we can never say the devil made me do it, but in a lot of situations, I mean, is the Hulk responsible for South Africa? Like, he got, mm-hmm. and all of these characters got jacked with in ways that affects then those pieces, probably in a more significant way. I mean, probably in a more direct way in one sense, because it's a literal physical power by another physical being. Mm-hmm. How much responsibility does Tony have? I liked that because I really would have hated a movie if that caused this catastrophic scale, and ultimately this character who's supposed to be the hero is more to blame than it balanced it out a little bit. It put a gray area in there that I liked, but it brought up that issue of how is he being, you know, he's being pulled back into the Tony we don't want. Maybe Civil War will be even worse. I don't, you know, he winds up backing the government, which in Iron Man 2 he was mocking. Who knows? Mm-hmm. We'll see where that goes. But
yeah,
I really love that. I liked that aspect of kind of Tony being like, this is something he's dealt with. But don't we all? The addict falls back into, you know, so many times the addict falls back into their addiction, and so many times, you know, that's what I see every day. So
yeah, well, it's Tony's struggle that really makes me appreciate his Nick Fury's very small role in this film. Because when I feel like Nick Fury shows up and only has a couple lines, but some of those lines I think underpin the thing that Tony does not understand, and I think is pretty revelatory for someone like Joss Whedon to put out there. And one of those lines was at the very end of the movie, when he says, no matter who wins or loses, trouble always comes around. there's this acknowledgement that no matter, you know, what our intentions are, no matter how many wins we get, we live in a reality where bad things are going to happen, whether we cause them, whether someone else causes them. You know, I don't think, obviously, Joss would be like, we live in a fallen world, and the devil's, you know, the devil's on the move, you know, like, he would never say things like that, but the acknowledgement that no matter how hard we try, trouble will always come around, coupled with what he says, and I thought he said this in the first time I watched it, and I listened specifically for it to make sure I heard it right, when Nick Fury is talking to Tony Stark in the barn, and he says, you created a lot of really great inventions. War isn't one of them. And he's basically telling Tony that these things are gonna happen. They're inevitable in the world that we live in. And you can take those comments and you can apply them to, is he saying that's humanity's fault? Is he saying that that's the universe's fault? Is there some kind of grand power that's not preventing it or spinning it in motion or allowing it to happen? Like, that's conjecture that we can put in. But ultimately, he's saying, look, it's going to happen. So, you know, it couples right with what Captain America or Steve Rogers was telling him, that every time someone tries to stop a war before it starts, innocent people die every time. Because you can't stop something that's gonna happen. You can't you can't unmake who we are. At least Tony Stark can't. Like I said, again, I don't think Whedon would probably argue for something that's really gonna make us, you know, new or a new creation and remove this from the world. I would say that he probably thinks that it's inevitable and have more of a fatalistic view of it.
Yeah, Joss's vision. Joss actually in his show Angel, I remember the ending of that was very, very controversial. And one thing that he said was, he's like, you know, that my, this show and probably a lot of his writing is he said, it's always been about redemption and redemption is ongoing. Mm-hmm. And so there is that sort of there's almost a never ending cycle to it, and there's something the Vision says at the end of the, and I don't know, like as a Christian, I'm going to categorize it differently. And I have a hope that I just don't think that they see, but there's the whole idea that comes up about how it's like, you know, they're doomed. Well, sure. Of course, humanity's doomed, but that's part of what gives them makes us so amazing and so beautiful is the fact that we are finite and doomed. And it's like, well, there's aspects there is some amazing things that we see in the nobility of our mortality in this existence that I can almost grab at some of what's being said there, but as someone who knows with a deep assurance that there is an eternity and there is like that, it's so not the sum of the story. I cannot just appreciate humanity because they're fleeting and doomed.
Yeah.
That was even something Brad Pitt's character got at in that movie Troy that everybody, it's just like that. We see it everywhere in a lot of cinema, whether it's, you know, an old epic Greek piece or whether it's, you know, the modern American myths of the Avengers, right? It's just, you know, something is beautiful because it's fleeting and kind of finite and doomed. And that's what gives it its beauty, is because it comes and fades. And I get that when we're talking about flowers and the glory fades. And I get there's something joyous to the seasons of life mankind plays into that, but it's a story that can't lift its eyes to the greater cosmic narrative. And that's why it's so disappointing in that, it's like, oh, you just can't quite see above that though.
So what I would say, and I'm pretty sure this is something that your review, I'm pretty sure it was your review, James, of the first Avengers movie pointed out to me, it's like Joss Whedon has the ability to see these pretty impressive truths about at least how we would see the world as Christians. Mm-hmm. But he just doesn't make that final leap. Because I remember one of my favorite things from the first Avengers movie is it's like how Loki is completely right and how Loki is completely wrong in his speech about how you know, humanity was made to serve or made to kneel.
Mm-hmm.
And so he gets it completely right because, you know, we were made to serve. You know, we were made to kneel before God. But we weren't made to serve, you know, something else. And everyone is going to serve something. Like, mm-hmm. we have, like, if we don't serve God, we're going to kneel before something, whether it be some kind of technicolor thing like drugs or addictions or something that would seem to be beautiful, like family or commitments to your work or, you know, your girlfriend or boyfriend, you know, things that you'd think were good. We're going to serve something. And I feel like this is the same thing that, like, you're talking about that Vision speech, you know, like it feels like he's so close. Like, he's got his hand around this concept that we can kind of jive with, but then he doesn't buy in all the way. Kind of like you're saying.
Yeah. And that, That's right. It only gets, well, I mean, they're comic book movies, so they only get you so far. I'm not expecting the genre or the medium or anything. I'm only expecting it to get to surface ideas. And that's cool. So I guess I don't, it doesn't make me angry or feel dissatisfied on as far as an expectation sense, but it does, and it chafes a little bit, but it's like, man, that still is an amazing conversation to then have. And I think anybody could take that and run with it. I mean, the Vision's conversation, like, is that the best that we're hoping for? Is that the doomed? Like, I just say that small exchange between he and Ultron at the end seems like that's some great fruit for, is that really what we really think? I mean, and yet then we see the cool thing where to me the slight glimpse of something more and something, because it's Joss Whedon, of course, so there's the Maid family that comes out of it. And so you have the character like Captain America who is, you know, at the end, the whole thing is, you know, I mean, he's sort of lost his home. He has no connection. He has no girlfriend. He has none of those things. And so the new home he finds, just like the new home he finds is, you know, the things of the normal world aren't going to play be in the cards for me. But I've got this family of very targeted, mission-minded peoples that, like, my new home is. I was like, man, you're practically describing the church. Like, this is Jesus saying, who are my mothers and brothers? You know, my mother and my brothers are the people who are on mission with me and who are my family. And we're, like, he's got that idea of the Maid family on mission. And yet again, he falls short of seeing how that would connect in a deeper and more cosmic way. But he's playing with it. He's playing with it with the Avengers, you know. And there's always that small thing in Joss Whedon's stories of it feels like you're missing the greater point, but you are so you're playing with it so well.
Well, I think what he's getting at is like the whole idea of, I think what C.S. Lewis calls it, I don't know how familiar you guys are with his little treatise called The Meditation in a Tool Shed. Where it's kind of like Whedon's almost doing what C.S. Lewis says, where, you know, that he's looking at it from the aspect of looking at it as it is, instead of like looking along. And he's referring to, like, you know, looking at a light beam through the tool shed, you know, just like this, you know, like the idea of looking at it. I think I actually have it right here because you got me thinking about it, James, and I just pulled it up right away because I have it. You know, he says, we must, on pain of idiocy, deny from the very outset the idea that looking at is, by its own nature, intrinsically truer or better than looking along. Like, you must look both along and at everything. And it's like, I almost feel like Whedon has a really great grasp of looking at something. You know, sort of like seeing the finitude or like the intrinsic value of something, like you were saying about, you know, like a flower. You know, there's beauty in it. Like, there's creation. Like, it was created. Like, if we know the whole story, we know that it's created. Like, we know it's beautiful, but we can't really fully appreciate that unless we're looking along past just like the finitude of it and looking along to like the big cosmic story, the mega narrative of everything. And so that's that whole idea, you know, is kind of missing. Like, and you don't expect Whedon, like, we're not expecting Whedon to be like, you know, get your act together, Whedon. But, you know, we're looking at it like we can see that he has a really great grasp of those things. But he's just, like you guys said, missing the longer view of it.
Yeah, I mean, I've passed the point where, sometimes I think there's sort of two ways you can run with it. You can either be really depressed that it doesn't get it all the way there, or you can. It's like when you're rooting for somebody who's on their way there. It's like, oh my gosh, this makes me so excited because you can see this much. There's sort of the optimist, you know, the optimist or the pessimist's view of that. It's like, yeah. You know, what's going on in him, or what is he, whether he knows it or not, causing to germinate in others as they do enjoy it on some level. And let's face it, a lot of people with hopes and dreams and depression and teenagers with their life ahead of them are seeing these films, and they are thinking, as I did as a teenager reading comic books. Like I'm thinking about what, you know, what do these characters and what, you know, what does Bruce Banner's angst and his loneliness and those things, and that, you know, I need to remove myself because I'm more of a detriment than I am good, and you know, can the monster ever be, you know, is this cursed nature just does that mean I should be separate from everyone, right, and everything?
Mm-hmm. Or almost like fearfully separate yourself from community and from like loving community in a sense.
Yeah.
You know, in order to protect what you feel is you're protecting yourself from everybody, or at least maybe even protecting yourself to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm. Or you think you're protecting, yeah, or you think it's the one, but you think it's the former, but it's really the latter. Because, yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, when we talk about Joss Whedon and almost getting there, it reminds me of, I believe it was Elijah Davidson in his review of the movie from Real Spirituality, who said it's really great to see these movies because at their best, they raise a lot of questions, but they don't give us a lot of answers, because if they did, that wouldn't really... If they answered everything, then we wouldn't need more Marvel movies. So, but we talked about, or Josh, you mentioned loving community and stuff like that. And when we talk about fear and how, you know, Scarlet Witch basically presents every character with kind of something that, like, their deepest fear or probably their deepest fear or what they're really afraid of. Could be the consequence of their actions or their trajectory, fear of the future, things like that. But we do, like I mentioned earlier, kind of have to compare it to what are they afraid is ultimately going to happen. And I feel like in most of these cases, with the exception of maybe like Bruce Banner and Black Widow, we have people afraid that, like, the standard of life, this current culture, is what's going to go away. And, you know, Tony Stark's afraid that, one, that his friends are going to die, but also, like, this safety, like, where the world is now is what needs to be kept. You know, Captain America's afraid that he's in a place that even though he doesn't recognize it, that it's going to go away too. Like, he just won't even recognize things further. And I see that pushing the team apart, and we obviously have lots of references to how the Avengers need to come together. They're stronger when they're together, and it leads us to, you know, that verse in 1 John that says, like, there is no fear in love, and perfect love drives out fear. And again, it's like something that I feel like Josh is dancing around, when the opposite of fear isn't courage to face your fear, it's love.
Mm-hmm.
And love pushing you back towards community, and seeing that everyone, you know, when the Avengers assemble, they're more powerful than they are apart or individually fighting their fears.
Right. Yeah. And, like, you know, you see that sort of realize at the end of the movie for some and not for others, which keeps that tension going as you're moving on to this next phase of the movies. Like, you know, like you said, we don't see it, or as I guess Elijah would put it in his review, you know, like, we don't get all the answers answered, or all the questions answered. That doesn't make sense. but we don't get all the questions answered. There's some realization for some, and there's tension for others, you know.
Yeah, we see the Hulk.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Who has the most obvious, you know, the most obvious for probably most audiences is, like, he has the option of, you know, sort of acceptance through romantic love, but he chooses to still put that aside to run, to hide himself, to isolate himself, as, you know, James
to be fair,
was talking about.
To be fair, she pushed him off a cliff. I'm just, you know.
Well, but they were even, because he, you know, she rode him to the flying continent. Had Final Fantasy flashbacks for a second.
that was a great moment. Oh, the flying island, yes. Final Fantasy.
I can say. Two thoughts, and I got to run. If you guys got to close up, I'm going to lose my connection here in a second. But I did think the last couple thoughts that I had were, In keeping what you were saying, like the love driving out is really important. And it was something Nick Fury surprised me. I wish I could remember the exact quote. You guys still there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sorry, something popped on my end. I thought I was cut off. Nick Fury says, I wish I could remember the exact quote, but he says something to Tony which actually felt really almost awkward between he basically said he cares about him so much, or they're in the barn. It was an unusual phrasing and moment that I didn't even expect Nick Fury to even ever say. We're just like, yeah. You know, I'm doing all this because, like, I really care about you. Like, there was this weird tenderness moment that happened, and of course, you know, Tony Stark doesn't visibly react. It's like, wow, that was an unusual choice. Probably, I mean, by the screenplay, by the actors, by everyone. It was like, this isn't just guys. It isn't just him putting blood on a card to get guys on a mission. It's like, I'm here because I really care about you, and you need to come together. Because like there's affection, and that was beautiful to me in a way that I'm not even sure what to, I haven't even fully digested that. It felt really, it didn't feel out of character, but it felt surprising. And so I hope it's one of those moments that people do talk about a little bit more, because it, you know, he's not just using them to get a job done. He legitimately has a fondness for even Tony. Like I could see him having fondness for a lot of other characters, but like, no, he actually cares about you, Tony. Like his heart actually aches that things are screwed up. And that was one of the most unusual and hard to quantify moments for me in the film. It just, which is fine, because I have a God that I have a relationship where I'm cared about by somebody who I don't understand why they do it either. So that's okay. But I also thought I love it. We always keep coming back, even though I love the way Ultron very easily could have just been the Skynet of the Avengers. But he was so filled with an emotion and a complicated and even dichotomous agenda. I mean, when he looks at Wanda and legitimately seems to care that she might die at the very end, right before she kills him, you know, just like that. Wait a minute. Spoiler alert, everybody who's listening. You know, it's just like there's, you know, say like there's something strange where, I mean, yeah, he effectively knows that everything has to end for it to ever begin again and be right. And there's something profoundly disturbing, but something I think part of us knows as we write, as you know, whether it's Terminator, whether it's Avengers, it's like, you know what, humanity's, we might put different terms on it. You know, he talks about evolution. He talks about all these different things, but like something in us has to be some kind of radical intervention by something other than human that effectively ends things and restarts it for this ever to work again. And he's not totally crazy there. You know what I mean? Like it's even, it's Joss and it's us. And it's like, you know, I don't see any way out of this except a full reboot of the race. It just, there's something has to happen. And I have a
Noah
category for that.
Yeah. He throws that Noah line in there.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He's throwing out. And part of us kind of knows that we need that now. And just as we never have, we never get all the way to the truth in either direction. It's like, even the villain actually in this case, he knows something very true that needs to happen. Fortunately, we have a God that actually has a lot of mystery and grace is achieving it through means that aren't quite like Ultron is trying. But it looks very different, and yet it's that need for an ending and a reboot and a new heaven and a new earth. And there's something that's happening there that's profound, to where it's like, you know what? I have some empathy for Ultron at the end of the day. I do. Because he's birthed, and there's something horribly broken in him, more broken than any of the other characters, because he's the Frankenstein's monster. And it's that same, like, he sees the kind of that Skynet Terminator reality of, you know, peace can happen if humanity's gone, but yet he doesn't even want all of humanity to be gone. He wants to find some... there's some sort of weird middle tightrope he wants to walk but can't, and it's odd to think that even bears itself out in a narrative that, yeah, I mean, so it's so easy to write off this narrative or write off the villain as, you know, of course he's trying to end the world. It's not, Joss is, once again, he's mining very fertile ground.
Yeah. What was interesting to me to see, basically Ultron, you know, people have kind of referred to him as like a teenager, like with the whimsicalness and, you know, emotional, I know everything, I know the right way. But it's, to me, it's just what would happen if someone could access all the information in the world, but they really don't have any life experience or foundational truths to kind of disseminate all that information. They're just making like the next jump, like kind of like you're saying, you know, peace can happen, but it needs to be without humans. But as he goes through life, it starts with a very simple mission and it progresses. And he, not only does he look like he's almost remorseful when when he talks to Scarlet or sees Scarlet Witch there at the end. But before that, I thought it was really odd that when he's talking to Black Widow and he sees her wake up, he's like, oh, you're awake. I didn't know if you'd wake up. I was lonely, basically. You know, he didn't have anyone to share his, like, plan with or just what he was doing. And he seemed like he was missing something, which is weird because it seemed like he was almost, like I said, progressing down that line. Maybe if he was given long enough, he would have gotten there. Who knows?
Well, there's a piece of him that would like to see a slice of humanity somehow redeemed and brought into a new world. Mm-hmm. And he has no ability to make that happen, but that's kind of what I think somebody's working on right now.
I was gonna say, if you're running short on time, why don't you tell us what your favorite parts of the movie were real quick?
Okay, if I'm honest, the Hulk fight fulfilled every piece of geek in me. That's the Hulk Iron Man fight. That is fully fulfilled. I could just watch that over and over. That's true. From a geek moment, I also only recently have gotten back into James Spader by watching The Blacklist. So it was a pure joy to see him tackle a character and tweak him from the comic book character to be. The character was never quite so imminently disturbed. When he cuts off Claw's hand and then apologizes, that was just that was just movie magic for me.
That was so great.
There were some simple joys in that, but as Joshua was saying, I've really enjoyed the way that they've taken Steve Rogers' character over the course of his films and the Avengers film, and really to him finding a home or him kind of coming to understand what home and family means was a beautiful moment. And even the conversations that he and Tony have had at the farm. I'm so glad that the farm scene was pretty broad and that was done well. I gotta say, those warmed my heart in some ways. Captain America may have. There's some debate. There was a Captain America comic or an issue of Power Man and Iron Fist, who most people probably have no idea who that is. Probably the first comic books I ever had as a child. And so Captain America is arguably the book I ever had. So there's something about his arc and something about how he's really the one character. Obviously, he's flawed. Obviously, from a Christian perspective, I understand he's sinned. But he kind of represents, like, everybody else is so flawed. He's kind of the one character that just kind of exemplifies being faithful with little when he was little, yeah, and not being faithful with much now that he's much. And there's something so inspiring about his, at least at this point in my life, it's like watching that movie and seeing him come even to Tony then, not even arguing and saying, oh, he's in charge. You know, my ego still makes me say I pay for everything.
Yeah.
but honestly, I know who the leader is here, and it's somebody who has even that tiny slice of humility in Tony. It was like, wow, okay, it's kind of cool to see people recognizing somebody that has been the humble, suffering servant, and not only that, since he isn't the ultimate one. Yes, the best example of a human. You know, as a Christian. I'd correlate him to, you know, he he's like an apostle. He's like, I wouldn't compare Captain America with Jesus, but at the same time, he's that person best exemplifying it, best. If you can't emulate Christ, emulate me. You know, it's like he's got that going on, and there's something to do that. It's not about America for me, so much as just like, oh, he exemplifies a virtue that I feel we have lost. And if people at least even begin to tie into that and start to ask questions about that,
mm-hmm.
That's where I think everybody, you know, we started this in 2008 and everybody wanted to be Tony Stark. If these movies keep moving, and I think they'll move with Civil War, part of us at the base level for his radical heart change. But ultimately, we should all want to look a little more like Captain America. And then comes the question, who does America look like? Those are the things that kind of warmed me most, and I appreciate you guys letting me have some time to ramble about it.
No, good. That's all good stuff. I mean, that's why I like Captain America so much. I didn't necessarily want to be Tony Stark when I saw the first ones, but I could relate to Tony Stark, you know, like mm-hmm. you mentioned the heart change, that whole, you know, snarky but kind of cool, but you know, heart of gold or heart of a billionaire or whatever. But once I saw the first Avenger, like I still almost cry every time, you know, Steve Rogers jumps on that grenade.
Or the fake
grenade, you know, just like seeing constantly striving for good. That to me, like kind of like you're saying, if people can even pick up on a little bit of that and start asking questions, I think that's a good thing. So,
well, we live in a culture where still everybody, I think about the DC side of the equation, and everybody still likes to say things like, oh, I like Batman. Because Superman, he's such a Boy Scout, blah, 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 blah. He's too good, he's too perfect, he's too whatever. It's on the people still say that on the DC side of the equation, but we have a culture that actually, I think in a lot of ways, we have a culture that's recognizing, oh, wow, the Boy Scout that is, I mean, Captain America is basically, power-wise, he's not the same, but personality-wise, Cap and Superman are kind of the same mm-hmm. Boy Scout equation on both sides of the different two comic book universes. And it's odd that we have a culture that is actually becoming falling in love with the Boy Scout, which is unusual. That being said, my Avengers Assemble card is going off, so I'll say sayonara. Look forward to doing this more with you guys.
All right, I'll be we'll be in touch.
Indeed.
Adios, right. Sir. Thank you so much.
Thanks, man.
Yep. Bye.
So, Josh, what were your well, if you do this, do it quickly. But did you have a moment that really was like a couple moment for you?
I don't know. I'm trying to think. I was really trying to come to terms with the fact that there might be a come on moment, but I really can't. Honestly, don't think that I can really think of one, and that might be lame. And I know that we've done that with other movies. I think you guys skipped over that with Calvary. it would have felt irreverent to have come on moments in that movie. And it almost feels slightly irreverent to have come on moments in this movie as well. I think here's my come on moment. My come on moment is all of the people out there that are bashing this movie because they're like, there are too many superheroes. The poster's getting kind of full, you know, like, come on, this is great.
this is one of the few times I would accuse people of not liking something simply because it's popular.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems very snooty of me. So I completely acknowledge that, people who didn't really, really like this film, but I think James said something really good when he described how he felt after he watched it the first time. Like he kind of felt like this uneasiness, or just kind of felt odd about it. And that's actually how I felt. People were like, well, how was the film? And you know, because of what we do here, I typically don't just say good or weren't bad. So like, yeah. I'm sitting on all these thoughts, and I was like, there were a lot of things I liked, but there were some things that make me felt kind of uneasy. And it wasn't until I watched it the second time through and had a little more framework for everything that was going to happen that I felt like everything was done for a reason. Like every line, there's no wasted lines, no wasted scenes. Everything kind of had a purpose. And the more and more I realized that, and the more I enjoyed it more, I enjoyed the humor more. And it's hard for me to imagine someone not enjoying this film unless they just don't want to enjoy this film. Mm-hmm. Especially once we get into conversations like this, there's so many conversations that this film starts. But with that said, I did try to think about a coma moment, and I think it was the only thing that really bothered me was the fact that to get to the scene, and obviously, you know, we've done spoilers where Quicksilver saves Hawkeye. We basically had to allow Ultron to get away. And I'm like, they were basically all, you know, taking him or taking the strongest version of Ultron out. And then they stopped to let him kind of say some things. And they did have the funny Hulk punch moment, but then they just kind of like forget he's around.
Right.
And go about their business. I'm like, wait. Why? Why did we let that even happen? And it seems like the only reason they let that happen is so we can get our moment where Joss Whedon gets to kill somebody, you know?
Sure.
Which for some reason I picture him like clapping his hands giddily, like, yay, I get to prove the stakes are high because I get to kill somebody.
But you killed Quicksilver. I mean, I don't know.
Well, I didn't love the fact that he died. I love the fact that It's really hard to telegraph something and then pull the wool back or pull the rug out from under people without making it look like you did that in like a ha ha, you're an idiot for thinking that kind of way. And I think that the entire Hawkeye storyline is great. His inclusion and importance to the team is made aware, and that the whole time everyone's like, when's Hawkeye gonna die? And when he doesn't, it doesn't seem like he just did it to be contrarian. It seems like it worked really well because of, you know, who died and how they died and the entire relationship that those two characters had up until that point. So, like I said, that's another way I'd point to, you know, everything had a purpose.
See that is kind of weird, but that's actually one of my favorite moments, when there's sort of like that, I gotcha. Cause you thought Hawkeye was going to die. Cause, Tina was like sitting next to me and she's like, he's gonna do it, he's gonna kill him, and he's gonna, and his wife isn't gonna have a husband, and she's gonna have three kids and be all by herself. And then she's like, I was just waiting for it to happen then for her to be like, he is so mean. And it didn't happen, and I was like, see, I told you, he has a heart, it's just Quicksilver just died. So I thought that was one of my favorite moments because I got to turn to her, because the whole time I'm thinking like, oh man, Hawkeye's totally going to bite it.
So the second time I watched it with a different set of people. So I was basically watching them the whole time, kind of like watching them wait for Hawkeye to die. And I remember the second time I looked over when, you know, Ultron's coming in towards the end and Hawkeye basically turns to accept his fate. And I looked at them being like, finally, like, obviously it's getting ready to happen, and then being like, what? So that was cool. But like you said, that Hawkeye, his humor, his lines, just like, you know, when Quicksilver runs off with Scarlet Witch and Hawkeye's just like, no one would even know, you know? He's like, oh no, the last time I saw him, Ultron was standing on him. Oh, poor guy, we're all going to miss him. You know, just that, oh man, just that sense of humor and I don't know, that whole storyline. But what was your favorite part? Was it the Hulk Iron Man fight?
James totally stole it from me. That was my favorite part. So, and you know, again, it's, I can tell when I've hit on something that might be a favorite part of a lot of people, because like the same thing, like, you know, like I've said a couple times already, like Tina doesn't like these kind of movies, but she actually liked that whole scene and just like the wit of Iron Man, you know, like the sorry line and, you know, go to sleep. Like she audibly like laughed very loudly when he was like, go to sleep. And, So yeah, that was definitely a part. I liked, speaking of, you know, that whole Quicksilver on the island part. I enjoyed the part where, you know, they told them all to hold fire and Quicksilver jumps out in front and then gets hit by a bullet and then just turns around and kind of has like a, come on, man. Like, what are you doing? I thought that was great.
That was great too. Go ahead.
So, and just another thing quick that hasn't been mentioned is I enjoyed, and I know it's been some, a little bit of ire, is, you know, Captain America delivering the Avengers Assembled line and it gets cut off. That was great. That was stroke of genius.
Well, so I enjoyed the Iron Man Hulk fight and it was definitely entertaining, but I guess it's mostly because there were enough large spectacled fight scenes that the fight scenes were all just something that I enjoyed, but it wasn't like my favorite part. Honestly, I think the saddest part about my favorite part is that I saw this in the trailer, and my favorite part was when, you know, Captain America goes to lift the hammer and it nudges and the look on Chris Hemsworth's face,
totally forgot about it,
is perfect.
Totally.
And then when he can't lift it, like, he's like, oh, of course not. Of course not. You know, nice try. But it's more than just the fact that, like, Chris Hemsworth does, like, a perfect kind of subtly worried piece to it. It's the fact that this lifting the hammer isn't just, like, a funny thing that Joss Whedon throws in there for no reason. It has increasing significance throughout the film. And because of what we were talking about before with Captain America's character, like, I love the fact that of everyone there, like, he's the closest, you know? Like,
yeah,
he can, like, he is a nudge close to being worthy. Like, and that's not, it's not a lame thing. I don't know. It just, much like you said earlier, I always liked Captain America. But after the first Avenger and Winter Soldier, like, Captain America is probably easily my favorite Avenger.
Yeah.
I guess is, you know, oh, you're still picking one of the main ones. So congratulations for really, you know, suffering for picking, you know, Captain America as your favorite. But yeah. I don't know. It's just, it's that and how that whole hammer scene, again, is not wasted. It's not just funny. It's, very intentional, and because we see what it does with the vision, and how do you explain if you're good or bad, and he creates a scenario in which the vision in one swift motion can basically prove his, you know, goodness or badness, and then just the when they're walking at the end of the film and they are talking about, like, well, Vision's like, you know, he's a robot, it doesn't really count. A robot can't be worthy. You know, put a hammer in an elevator still goes up. Elevator's not worthy. Oh my gosh.
Oh,
I laughed so hard. I kept saying that to Laura over and over and over again. Just, you know, elevator's not worthy. So anyway. So, you know, any final thoughts? There's so much, gosh, I wish we weren't, you know, kind of reaching time, but any final thoughts, anything you wanted to hit on? Cause I know there's something I want to ask you.
Oh man. I don't know. I feel like my praise has been effusive. And, you know, like I said, I don't think this is the best Marvel movie at all, but, like, I thoroughly enjoyed myself. And again, it's just, it's Whedon takes these movies to a different level, and he's done such a good job with both of the Avenger movies. And it's like, I just don't know if they could fly with anybody else, but I'm hopeful that they will, because they have to. Yeah. So, you know, it's just, there is so much, and I definitely need to see it again and be able to catch some of the things that I missed to go deeper. But I just really, really appreciate this movie, and I hope to see it a bunch more times, because it's just, again, it's one of those movies that I will own and I will watch a lot. So I just, what am I going to do? I love it. It was great.
What am I going to do?
I got no choice.
Take
my money.
Exactly. What are you gonna do? You don't fight it. Just turn your money over and thank you, Disney. I'll see Star Wars too. And Ant-Man.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, so. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Let's not get started in that. We got 7 months to wait for that.
Well, so I'll say this as something that I just kind of want to throw out there, not necessarily for discussion, but something that I've noticed, and I want to partially credit one of our guests who's on frequently, Elijah Lovejoy, with kind of putting this seed in my head. But he has pointed out how recently there has been, humanity has had a fascination with avoiding death, or at least postponing it. I mean, there's articles out there about, like, you know, the heads of all major corporations, the heads of Google and things like that, pouring, you know, millions and millions of dollars into like regeneration, life, you know, extending techniques, these concepts of living forever, transferring consciousness, all these ideas are really permeating, like, our society, which is weird because we haven't even cured, you know, some basic diseases that are killing lots of people, and these other people are trying to figure out how to live forever.
Right.
And I bring that up because, one, there's been a ton of movies about postponing death. Last year we had The Congress. Interstellar was basically about humanity escaping its fate. Even though it was apparently terrible, Transcendence talked about, you know, kind of postponing death, extending life. And that ties, I think, directly into this concept of artificial intelligence and what role that plays. And we had, last year we had The Machine, we had Big Hero 6, which is about artificial intelligence, even though it's not, you know, it's more of a kid's movie. And this year already we've had Chappie, Ex Machina, and Avengers of Ultron, or Avengers of Ultron, Age of Ultron, which all deal with, like, creating life. And then what to do with it, and what's humanity's place. And if I had to guess, you know, we had a dystopian run, like, what's the future going to be like? But now we have, like, I think there's something in humanity that's saying, we're going to be here for a while, let's figure out how to avoid death for as long as possible. So I mentioned this, like I said, not necessarily to have an extended conversation about it, but to notice a trend and to guess that we're probably going to have that conversation a number of times in the future, whether it's the remainder of this year or next year. So it's always cool to see pop culture kind of patterns that, like I said, directly reflect what society feels. So, you know, in the '80s, people were all afraid that, the communists were going to take over, but we had Schwarzenegger, we had, Chuck Norris, and, you know, Chuck Norris took care of all that for us. And just seeing the shifts and things. But anyway, so I know James had to go. I always like people to have a chance to promote what they have. You can find James's work at cinemagog.com. And if you get there, you can find his Twitter stuff. We'll have all that in the show notes. And Josh, let people know how they can get a hold of you.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm at Real World Theology. Perhaps you've heard of it. Yeah. So I write there 3 to 4 times a week, you know, reviews, all that kind of good stuff. My Twitter, you can find all that information at Real World Theology on the contributors page, but my Twitter is Hey, It's That Josh. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Letterboxd, which is the Facebook for movie lovers. I love being on there. I was off of it for like 10 days while I was in Florida. So I feel like a part of me is missing right now. So get ready. Probably tomorrow it's going to get inundated with stuff that I saw while I was on vacation.
Because they really need a mobile app.
They do. Anyways, so that's where you can find me. So I write at Real World Theology, and Mikey will tell you more about that.
It's a pretty cool place.
It really is.
Well, you can follow me at Physification. You'll often find me either tweeting there or tweeting from at Real World Theo, which is the Twitter account for the show and the site. If you'd like to know more about Real World Theology, then visit our website, realworldtheology.com. That's R-E-E-L, worldtheology.com. Connect with us on Facebook, on Twitter, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. Leave us feedback. We really appreciate it. Comment on the website. You know, you disagree with us about something. You hated this movie for whatever reason. Let us know. Because, like I said, we really want to focus less on if a movie's good or bad, but mm-hmm. what themes it has and what impact it's having. And right now, surprisingly, this Avengers Age of Ultron has not surpassed the original Avengers film for box office, but I imagine it might by the end of the, you know, but when it's all said and done.
Yeah.
So it's obviously having a cultural impact. People are going to see it, and we're wanting to have really good conversations afterwards. So join that conversation. Leave us some feedback. Tell your friends, and hopefully that conversation will grow. So, you know, I really appreciate James and Josh taking their time to be here. I want to thank you listeners for taking time to make us a part of your week. We really, really appreciate that. You could do a lot of things with your time, and the fact that you give us a little bit of it is something that, you know, we are very, very grateful for. It'd just be us, you know, talking to ourselves, which probably happens anyway, but occasionally we record it and we're glad you listen. So, until next episode, remember that story is powerful and entertainment is not mindless. Bye-bye.
Avengers!
This podcast is a member of the Crossover Nexus. To find out more or to hear about other podcasts that engage faith and pop culture, please go to www.crossovernexus.com.
Oh, man. This is like some kind of nerdvana for me.